In this third and final hour, two conversations on the B side of this hour, a climate justice conversation with Felicia Davis about the critical work of the HBCU Green Fund, where she is managing director. So we'll talk about climate justice and black people with Felicia Davis on the back side of this hour. But we commence this hour with a nature story. Writer, researcher, and behavioral scientist Dr. Janet Barber tells us why the story of the cicada, is really a story of black love, black achievement, and Benjamin Banneker, who was attracted to and inspired by nature. It is a fascinating story with interesting connections that only Dr. Janet Barber can do justice to, so I'm pleased to have her on this program. Dr. Barber, how are you today?
I am doing fantastic, Tavis. Thank you so much for allowing me this platform.
No, I'm glad to have you. Let me just say this. My program's 3 hours long. I'm in the third and final hour now. So a couple hours ago, I teed up the fact that you'd be on, we'd be talking about this, and I had people texting me and reaching out saying, what is that conversation about? They didn't quite get the connection between the cicada, black love, black achievement, Benjamin Banneker. So I'm going to let you make all this make sense in the few moments that we have here. So I don't know where you want to begin, but take it away.
Okay, I'm going to take it away. Number one, let me say that song you just played there fits right in with black love, human beings of any race. But I'm telling you, those cicada will probably love that song as well, because the cicada come out, the one that we studied, brood eggs every 17 years. And so a lot of bulk of my research started in 2004, and then it went on up to 2021. And these cicada, one of the sole things they do is to ensure that their ancestors are happy and that their descendants are supported.
Let me jump in right quick. So that I want to make sure that everybody's on the same page. We're talking about the cicada. And for those who don't know cicada, that's spelled C-I-C-A-D-A. Don't want to insult anybody. I want to make sure that all of my listeners are on the same page. So it's spelled C-I-C-A-D-A. Look it up. They're called the cicada. Before you get into the story, tell us what the cicada are. Who are the cicada? What is a cicada?
The cicada, it's actually an insect.
An insect.
And let me explain to you, Tavis, it is an insect. And during the Banneker's time, he referred to them as locusts, but they are essentially, just as you said to the audience, they are called the cicada.
Mm-hmm.
And on the brood egg cycle, which Benjamin Banneker recorded, they come out every 17 years. Now, granted that the cicada that's coming out very soon in the summer, everybody, mostly in the deep south, will be hearing the cicada twofold. The cicada that's coming out during the summer, Tavis, will be the brood 19, which comes out every 17 years, but at a different time than the brood X that I and my co-worker and co-coordinator and co-collaborator wrote about in 2014. Mm-hmm. I'll get back to that.
Mm-hmm.
But the cicada that's coming out, that's going to emerge together, they were together in the last time was 1803. So we are coming upon a very rare and phenomenal time this summer. So I want people to take note of what they're hearing. Sometimes the cicada can sound very pesty. They can be irritating to you. And most certainly, if you're having a wedding or something, you're in the South, you are going to hear some loud, loud cicada. I mean, they can be louder than a lawnmower. They are going to be very loud.
Yeah.
And so, brood 13 and brood 19 are going to emerge together in the USA this summer, starting around mid-May all the way to the end of June, and this has been the last time was in 1803. The next time these cicada come out,
right,
they will be 2,245.
So this is
when the next time they will come out.
So this is like a solar eclipse that only happens every so often, right?
Well, it only happens ever so often. You brought it up, solar eclipse. I'm going to try not to be all over the place with that, but that just jogged my memory for that.
Yeah.
That at age 40 in 1789, Tavis, Benjamin Banneker predicted the solar eclipse.
Hold that thought.
He was right on target.
Hold that thought. This is why I love black people. Benjamin Banneker was a bad man. And I know y'all thinking, why is Tavis talking about the cicada? This is fascinating, interesting nature stuff. The first time these two broods have been together since 1803, you're going to hear a lot of loud noises coming from these insects, these cicada, this summer. But the connection to Benjamin Banneker is really fascinating for me. And the story that there's actually an insect, did you know, I didn't, that there's an insect that only comes out once every 17 years? Oh, this is going to be interesting. Dr. Janet Barber, more with her when we come forward on Tavis Smiley.
From the Merck Park with love, this love. Is Tavis Smiley. He's rooting for everybody black.
Everybody black. Black.
More of Tavis Smiley coming your way right now.
Right now.
Right now.
Right now.
That's the sound. You recognize it? We're talking about the cicada. That's the sound that we all know. And we're going to hear a lot of it this summer. And they are loud. Yeah. In case you hadn't caught up with me now. Now that you've heard the sound. Tavis, now I know what you're talking about. The cicada. You knew the sound. You may not have known the name. They're called the cicada. That's the sound they make. And as I said a moment ago, quoting Dr. Barber, it's going to get even louder this summer because there are two broods of cicada, brood 13, brood 19. I'm learning like you're learning. They coming together for the first time since 1803. They're going to be especially loud this summer when you're outside doing events outside, and there's not much you can do about it until they just decide to go away. Now, the cicada, we are talking about Dr. Barber, in case you've just tuned in, only come out like once every 17 years, which is fascinating for me. And let me just say a quick word about why I'm so fascinated by this. You heard me say all the time, I said on today's program, that I love black media because so many reasons. Black media is necessary and relevant. But what I've learned over the years, and I talk to my staff, my production team about this all the time, and I believe this with every fiber of my being.
Mm-hmm.
And I quote my friend Maya Angelou, the late, great Maya Angelou. Maya Angelou, quoting a great writer, Tennyson, as I recall, once said that because I am human, nothing human is alien to me. Because I am human, nothing human is alien to me. There is nothing in the human experience that somebody black ain't an expert at. I don't care what the subject matter is. You're going to find, if you look hard enough, if you search long enough, you're going to find somebody black who's an expert in that field. Who knew that there were black experts in insects, in cicada? And who knew there's a connection of black love and black achievement and Benjamin Banneker to the cicada that we hear and get annoyed by every summer? So all that said, that's why I'm so excited about the conversation, so excited to have Dr. Janet Barber on this program for the next 15 minutes or so before I shift gears here in our final half hour. But while I've got you, let me ask a few questions now, given what you've already said. So tell me why these two broods haven't been together since 1803.
One thing is that they make sure, they're very smart insects. These are very smart cicadas. They want to make sure that they do not cross each other and eliminate each other.
Uh-huh.
And so they have found a way, even though we have cicada that comes out every 17 years, there are different broods that come out every 17 years because they want to keep their particular brood or family together. And if they get together with other broods, they might be eliminated. And so they want to make sure that they plant their seed or the over, they plant their seed under trees where the others will not be coming back in that 13-year period or that 17-year period. And that is the reason they are separated. That's not to say that insects and humans and everybody should be separated in that way, but we also tap it, as we know in our world, we need to be cognizant of the fact that sometimes there are certain reasons that certain families might need to coexist but also stick with your family. And I'm telling you, biology can teach you a lot without even talking. And as you brought up Maya Angelou, something else she said that's coming to my mind was, everything in the universe has a rhythm.
That's right.
Everything dances.
Oh, Lord, yes. Everything
and this
dances.
Is what Maya Angelou said. And so that's sort of what we're looking at. And to bring up, you know, the geniuses or the genius of Benjamin Banneker, you know, being a fantastic mathematician, being a fantastic farmer and astronomer. And so we have to look at all these things, and we have to make sure we keep Benjamin Banneker's name in our mind, in our world, for the things that he did do. And my co-writer with me on that research paper from 2014 is Dr. Osamor Nkwanta, and he has become the president of the National Association of Mathematics.
Wow.
And so we have to look at what we're doing, how we're doing it, and you move right along to inspire others.
Yeah.
We need to inspire our black children, our black teenagers, and adults as well into understanding that we do need the psychology, which is my background. You do need the sociology, which is my background. Mm-hmm. But we also need to understand nature in a way where we can connect.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
No, I agree. That's why I wanted to have you on. We got to understand nature in a way that we can connect. You said that beautifully. Tell me more then about the connection between Benjamin Banneker, his research, and the cicada.
Benjamin Banneker started documenting around 1800. Mm-hmm. However, he had been making notes to himself since 1749, and that is when he was 17 years old. Now, I'm telling you, as I've been telling some groups, that even though Benjamin Banneker started noticing these things when he was 17 years old, the cicada,
mm-hmm.
he had already heard these. Tavis, because he was born in 1731,
mm-hmm.
November 9th, 1731. Now, by the time the cicada came in May, June of 1732, which they did, this baby was in his crib listening to the cicada. I don't know from where he lived in that little cabin whether or not some cicada jumped in that crib. I don't know.
Mm.
But this month is April, and this is poultry month, isn't it?
Yeah, it
and
is.
And so in 2021, in studying these cicadas, and this poem came to me while I was on Benjamin Banneker's farm. And the name of it is Baby Benjamin Banneker and the Magi Cicada. Years from adulthood, deep down in old Maryland woods, a feathered bed as his crib, little baby Benjamin heard magic for real. His brain already bright for a 17-year flight. The Dogon star smiled down, dually anointing his head and vision alike. Baby Ben saw the magic, wings twirling around into the May night. The 1730-year cicada singing loudly with delight.
Mm.
And as far as I'm concerned, that's when Benjamin Banneker stopped studying the cicada. But he did document the 1749,
yeah.
And then he documented 1766. Then he documented 1783. And 1800 was the last time that he documented. And so, but in 1803, there were not so many cicada, because in 1803, the last time that the other two broods, 13 and 19, merged together,
mm-hmm.
emerged together, were in other states, Kentucky, Alabama, you know, deep down south and some parts of North Carolina.
Yeah.
And that's where they were. And so it's doubtful that he heard them, but they were in St. Mary's County, Maryland, not too far.
Yeah.
And so if he did hear about them, he got on a horse and it probably took him 4 days to get there.
Yeah.
But so what? If you're a scientist, you're a scientist.
No, are cicada, are they regional? You mentioned the South. That's where they really nest, if I can use that word, nest. They hang out in the South. But are they regional, mm-hmm. or are they all across the country?
I tell you, they can be all across the country. Today, I mean, in May, June of this year, the cicada are going to be in, they're going to be in Kentucky, they're going to be in Alabama, they're going to be in Arizona, they're going to be in parts of North Carolina. They're going to have a small emergence in the St. Mary's area of Maryland. And so in Chicago, they're definitely going to be in Chicago, Illinois. And that's where they're going to have.
Dr. Barber, I'm laughing because you tell me where they're going to be, like they're going to be on tour, like they published a list or something. Here's the list where we're going to be hanging out this summer.
They're going to be mating to that song you played earlier, too.
Yeah.
They're going to be in Arizona. They're going to be in Alabama, Illinois, Indiana, Kentucky, Louisiana. Missouri, Mississippi. They're going to be where you're from, Tavis.
Oh, yeah.
They're going to be in Mississippi,
yeah.
Oklahoma, South Carolina, Tennessee, and some parts of Virginia. Virginia, a little, they're going to get a little taste in Alexandria, actually, not too far from Benjamin Banneker's homestead,
yeah.
But it's not going to be a lot. But
is
I like to think about the fact.
Now, finish your point. I want to ask you a question about their movement. You want to finish your thought. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm going to make a point about the Alexandria, Virginia,
right,
on Pitt Street. Benjamin Banneker was there in 1771 when he was working with George Eliot for surveying. And I know from my research, and a lot of people just don't know this, that right there on Pitt Street in Alexandria, Virginia, Benjamin Banneker walked those streets or those paths or whatever they might have been in 1791. And every time my husband and I go down that street, we think about and talk about Benjamin Banneker.
Yeah. Tell me more about, you mentioned the places they're going to be. Tell me more about their movement. How do they decide, these cicada, how they move, how they dance?
Now, for one thing, they look at the earth, which if it's not 64 degrees, they might not emerge at that time.
Okay.
The areas we're talking about now would be the areas where you're going to find, 64 degrees. That just happen to be the places where they go. And not being an entomologist, just a historian, really, who's interested in Benjamin Banneker, and then just happen to come across these, the interest in cicada, because I have someone in my environment studying prime numbers, studying the cicada in reference to Benjamin Banneker, having some type of connection.
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. Quanta was looking at, I'm thinking that there might be something in the museum in Maryland, and we found that information, and that's how he and I ended up writing and co-authoring this paper that came out in 2014.
Mm-hmm.
And Tavis, in reference to them being across the United States, it is certain broods know when to come and where to go. And it would take an entomologist to sort of tell you more about that.
Right.
And being a social scientist, and then a mathematician, we might need to go to the entomologist for that. But there's a tremendous amount of research on the cicada, which a lot of people are not so much interested in.
Yeah.
I'm certainly not interested so much in eating them as some people are, but they had little cafes around here in 2021. But we're looking at 2024 now, and those are the places that I named earlier where they will be. And so they dig a little hole about a dime size. And if you're in an area where you see like these little strange dime size little holes in the land, believe me, a cicada is probably going to come out of there around May or June.
Wow. Tell me more about your husband and how, I mentioned that this story of the cicada is a story of Black achievement. It's a story of Benjamin Banneker. It's also a story of Black love. Tell me about you and your husband and your interest in these fields.
Well, for one thing, being a behavior scientist, I was interested in Benjamin Banneker. And I'm interested in Benjamin Banneker, but also his mom. Where did this genius child come from? And so that's what a lot of work that I'm doing. My husband is a mathematician. And so he was interested in Benjamin Banneker, mathematics, prime numbers, and the magic of the cicada, which are actually called magic cicada for the bruettes. And so even though I'd written about Benjamin Banneker years ago in 1993, actually, looking at the humanitarian side of Benjamin Banneker, and so he knew I was interested in Benjamin Banneker, and so he approached me with this thing about the bugs, and that is what I called them, Tabitha. I'm like, I don't know if I'm interested in these bugs. But it became more than the bugs, and it has kept us talking about the cicada for years.
Yeah.
And so, when we got on NPR and explained to people about Benjamin Banneker and how he was one of the first to document and observe the cicada, now that is what we said. And in that paper from 2024, we explained that he was one of the first. We did not say that he was the first.
Right.
Of course, I'm not going to even name the news outlets. They came out, oh, no, these people were on NPR, and they said that Benjamin Banneker was the first. He was not the first.
Yeah.
And we put in the paper plainly that there were documentations in 1633, 1666, 1683, and we put it in the paper, and people want to see whatever they want to see. And that is why Tabitha Smiler has a news outlet, so that we can get our voices heard without being trampled upon continuously and forgotten about. And so
now they
I'm
will,
hoping that people will hear the message Benjamin Banner.
They're hearing it loud and clear. And trust me, I've been at this a long time, as you know. They will take your words and twist them. And so you and I are simpatico in this regard. That's why we need black media, where you can tell your stories, as you said, and tell the truth without being trampled on. He is one of the first. But it's amazing to me. It's amazing to me because the story of Benjamin Banneker reminds us that black folks should not be now, nor have we ever truly been, afraid of math and science. We don't need to be afraid of that. And exactly. Benjamin Banneker stands as a tall example of the brilliance of black people in all sorts of fields of human endeavor, including science, including math. And so I celebrate this story because I'm learning more about Benjamin Banneker. I celebrate this story because it speaks to black achievement. I celebrate this story because it at the heart of it is black love with you and your husband and the work that y'all do together. But I really celebrate this story because as black people, we ain't going to be able to avoid the cicada this summer. And so since you can't avoid them, you might as well know more about them and learn more about them and read more about Benjamin Banneker. And for that, we thank Dr. Janet Barber. Dr. Barber, I thank you for the time we've had. You've empowered me with stuff I didn't know. I'm sure the audience learned stuff as well. So thank you for your work and your witness, and all the best to you and your husband.
Thank you so much. I enjoyed this. Thank you.
I enjoyed it immensely. Good to have you on this program. I love nature. You love nature. My mama loves nature. I just love learning about it. And who knew that Benjamin Banneker had tracked the cicada for all those years over the course of his life, stopping in 1800. And here we are now this summer, headed toward a season where brood 13, brood 19 are coming together for the first time since 1803. And it's going to be loud this summer with the sound of cicada. Where else would you have learned that except listening to Tavis Smiley?
Unapologetically progressive. Unapologetically black.
Black.
You're tapped into Tavis Smiley.
Tavis Smiley. Smiley.
More honesty than you can handle.
More empowerment than you can imagine.
You're tuned into Tavis Smiley. Smiley.
Indeed you are, and I'm glad about it. What an amazing conversation with Dr. Janet Barber. First of all, her energy and enthusiasm is infectious. I just love people who are passionate about the work that they do. And as I said moments ago, I don't care what the subject matter is. If you look long enough and hard enough and do research, you're going to find somebody black who's an expert in that field. And so I just love the story of black love and black achievement and Benjamin Banneker as it relates to these cicada, who we're going to be hearing loudly this summer as these two broods come together. So get your mind right and get some earplugs, because you're going to be hearing cicada pretty aggressively. It's kind of like that solar eclipse, as I say. It only comes around once every so often. But for these two broods to be out together for the first time since 1803, we are told it's going to be really, really loud this summer with these insects called the cicada. What a fascinating conversation about nature. And I thank Dr. Janet Barber and her husband for the work they're doing and bringing us that conversation. Now, we close today's show with Felicia Davis, who's managing director of the HBCU Green Fund. We are committed for the rest of this year. We've already started, of course. Felicia is in a line of these conversations, but we've already started having conversations and will continue for the rest of the year about climate justice, climate and black people. It's a major issue. Black people, as I often say, are the black and poor people, are the disproportionate victims of these climate catastrophes, these climate maladies. And so the timing could not be more propitious in this election season, where I hope this issue gets raised higher on the American agenda to talk about climate and black folk. So enter into the conversation the managing director of the HBCU Green Fund, Felicia Davis, who I'm honored to have on this program. How are you today?
I am wonderful. I am so excited. I am absolutely energized to be speaking with you on this topic. It's kind of been a long time coming, but indeed, Black America is aware that climate change is real and climate justice is essential. Yeah. So I'm happy to be here, and I'm just really, I just want to, at the top of the conversation, say how meaningful it is to have you addressing it, not only for today, but for an entire year.
No, I appreciate you saying that. It's our commitment, and we are honored to have you as a part of these many conversations we're going to be having over the course of this year. Let me just probe right quick something you said a moment ago. And I think you're right about it, but I'm curious as to why it is the case that it has been such a long time coming for us to really wrap our brains around climate and what it does and what it means for our community. Why has it been so long in the making?
So climate, I think we relate to it as something nebulous, hard to wrap our minds around. Mm-hmm. At a time when we're the ones that we suffered through Katrina, we have, you know, toxic dumping. We had upfront issues that the environmental justice community have been struggling with and working on for years. So it's around, I came into climate work from civil rights work, mm-hmm. and that was in the year 2000. So even saying to my community, no, this is the quintessential issue of our lifetime,
yeah.
it's been almost 25 years for it to actually land. So it's a tough thing, but I thought after Katrina, certainly yeah. our community really gets it.
You make a powerful point when you informed us a moment ago that you came from civil rights work to climate work. And one of the things that I find myself saying repeatedly, I know you agree on this, and I want to get your take on it, which is simply this, that climate justice is racial justice. Climate justice is social justice. Are we making any progress in making those points?
So here's the bottom line. If we kind of look at economics, right, over time, if you look at energy as the defining characteristic, then that will center how important the climate conversation is to the status of the Black community here in the U.S. Mm-hmm. and globally. So, and right now, I'm excited to be on the show because we are in America going to have the greatest transfer of wealth ever. So ever, yes, in my lifetime, but ever. We're talking about billions moving, and we're going to have a new and different economy based on what we do with energy. The climate change is the driver for that. This is a moment that if we miss it, we consign our future generations to be in a lower status than they are present. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the real deal.
That's the real deal. That's hard to fathom, that we're going to get lower than we already are. We still lag behind today in every leading economic indicator category. And to think that if we miss this moment, we're going to drop even lower is something that that I don't even want to begin to process.
Tell me,
yeah, exactly. I don't even want to entertain it. Tell me more specifically about the HBCU Green Fund.
So the HBCU Green Fund was created to help catapult or leapfrog Black colleges and universities kind of from the back, hopefully to the front. So that was our core mission. We've been around almost 10 years now. Mm-hmm. And right now we have an opportunity. So with the Biden-Harris administration's commitment to Justice 40, 40% of the Infrastructure Act, of the bipartisan bill has to go to quote-unquote disadvantaged communities. And in some instances, for example, the Environmental Protection Agency has $2 billion that is out now for projects in communities, and 40% or more will go into disadvantaged communities. So how are we coming together, one, to put the word out, and two, to come up with projects that will provide renewable energy, that will reduce energy burden, that perhaps develop new technologies, that will bring electric vehicle charging, all of these things. This is the moment and the opportunity.
We are continuing our climate justice campaign series with a number of conversations throughout the year, specifically about Black folk and climate. Our guest in this hour is Felicia Davis, Managing Director of the HBCU Green Fund. More with her when we come forward on Tavis Smiley.
This is getting good.
Yeah, man.
Tavis Smiley. Smiley continues when we come forward. Helping to make you the most knowledgeable person in your circle of friends. This is Tavis Smiley.
Tavis Smiley and Felicia Davis, who's managing director of the HBCU Green Fund. Felicia Davis, tell me more about the way you envision these HBCUs serving as models of sustainability.
Sure. I'm going to give an example.
Sure.
So here in Atlanta, you have Clark Atlanta, Spelman, Morehouse College. And you have some urban agriculture going on. You have a number of projects around. This is a moment where Morehouse College or Clark can have the lead because they're large enough to go after $10 and $20 million grants. Mm-hmm. And the Environmental Protection Agency, for the first time, has made it possible for the larger institution to partner with community-based entities. There's $2 billion in that, with a B,
right,
in that fund on a rolling basis. So what this does for the HBCU is connect them back to community, not that they were, you know, not that there was a wall around them, but the community felt like they were a bit disconnected,
right,
and there's a real need for us to go in and do it. So there are opportunities in housing. HBCUs are limited by the number of dorm rooms that they can provide. Those dorm rooms need to be energy efficient,
mm-hmm,
because if they're not, the energy bill goes up and so does the tuition for the kids.
Mm-hmm.
So these are ways that the ripple effect, when we talk about energy burden, that, you know, especially like on the West Coast, your energy bill, well, not today, won't outdistance your rent or mortgage, but in some communities, they can be parallel.
Oh, absolutely.
Right?
No
energy
question.
Burden.
No question.
So, however, if you're able to have solar energy, all right, and at least reduce that burden, then you're able, your community is strengthened. So if you look at our communities, you don't see solar panels on every roof,
mm-hmm,
you know. But now the resources are, what's coming down the pike next is solar for all. That 100% of those resources, some $7 billion, will go into quote-unquote disadvantaged communities. So right now I'm hyper-focused on that. But, of course, HBCU Green Fund, naturally we work with students. We have extensive work in Africa where we take HBCU students on an eco spring break.
Mm.
So they do service learning. They've gone, this year we went to Ghana, last year we went to Senegal. Next year, we're deciding, do we go back to Ghana or do we go to Tanzania?
Mm-hmm.
Florida A&M has a food, water, energy nexus conference coming up July 1st to the 4th in Durban, South Africa. So HBCUs, not only are we on climate change, are we present at UN conferences, are we doing the work here at home, we are moving out globally.
Yep,
and so this is we can go from the back to the front.
Nope, I love the story that we're hearing now of the ways in which HBCUs are stepping up on their campuses to embrace this climate justice issue and all the tentacles that offshoot it, again, because our people are the ones who most often, black people and poor people, are the ones most often victimized by these catastrophes. Our remaining moments with the managing director of the HBCU Green Fund, Felicia Davis, when we come forward on Tavis Smiley.
More of Tavis Smiley when we come forward. Made fresh daily in the Mert Park,
Los Angeles, California.
You're listening to Tavis Smiley.
I got about 4 minutes left here. 4 minutes left, Felicia Davis. I want to ask a couple questions. Let me move through this swiftly. I'm always curious as to the backstory of black people who are in this climate space. The more I do this, the more I realize there have been folk who've been long distance runners on these issues. How did you get pulled in?
So actually, I was recruited. I had done some work with the Million Man March.
Uh-huh.
And in about 2000, a progressive white organization reached out. I gave them a number that I didn't think they would meet. They said yes right away. At that time, I wasn't even sure. I wasn't sure what I thought about it. Right. But that brought me in. And then I was working closely with Dr. Joseph Lowry, the late Joseph Lowry. And he was on, you know, he was early on. He was in Warren County. He was definitely an environmental justice supporter from day one. So Dr. Lowry actually supported my work, supported me in this effort, and the rest is history.
Rest is history.
So from the year 2000 forward.
I love it. I love it. I know that you went to, you're a Bison, correct? You went to Howard.
Yes, I did.
That's been
absolutely
amazing.
You know.
Yeah, I know. I did my research.
Actually, you were in Atlanta. This was some time ago. I can't think of the year. But you were here for a book signing early on. You and Julianne Malveaux, so you know.
Oh, yeah.
Separate book.
Oh, yeah.
But went back with Melanie Campbell.
Oh, I love Melanie.
Virgin.
Absolutely love
so,
her.
Yeah. So we've crossed paths.
No, I love it. I'm glad. I'm glad we're crossing paths on this issue.
Early.
Yeah.
But then the one thing I would say is that the importance, imagine that there are $27 billion, 70% or more of it, $27 billion with a B, targeted to quote-unquote disadvantaged communities. Now, they could be in West Virginia coal country, or it could be in South Atlanta, south side of Chicago. It's up to us what we do now and how the only thing that will limit us is not coming together to scale what we're able to do.
Beautifully said, and I couldn't agree more. I've got about 90 seconds left. I want to give it to you to brag about your HBCU Fellows Program.
Yes, our fellows are amazing. Students from Bennett College, Spelman, Morehouse, Clark Atlanta University, and expanding. You can reach us, any young person that's interested. We believe it's all about the young people, their ideas, their energy. You can reach me, myself, Felicia, F-E-L-I-C-I-A, at hbcugreenfund.org. We always respond. We have a team. I, you know, what am I? I'm like a elder millennial. I now refer to myself.
You got your own term. You got your own term. I'm an elder millennial.
Yes. Yes.
All right, man. That's you. Give that web address one more time before I lose you. Give it one more time.
That is hbcugreenfund.org. So if they get there, they'll find me. It's Felicia at hbcugreenfund.org. If you email me, I'll email back.
HBCU Fellows Program is an amazing program. And I just, again, celebrate all these people of color, these black people who are doing the righteous work, the heavy lifting in this climate space. And we're going to be doing these conversations all year long to showcase their work, but also to help us be empowered with the information that we need to turn this tide, pardon the pun, against the climate tsunami that's trying to overtake us. On that note, we thank Felicia Davis for her work and witness. Good to have you on. All the best to you. Thanks for your time.
Well, thank you for having me.
My great delight. Just like that, 3 hours gone. Back here tomorrow, Lord willing, to do it all over again until tomorrow. Thanks for tuning in to Tavis Smiley. And as always, keep the faith.